All glories to assembly devotees. All glories to assembly devotees. All glories, all glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudirayet Nashtaprayeshva Badreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavatir Uttamashloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya Cha Nanda Gopakumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 14, entitled Lord Krishna Explains the Yoga System, Text Number 5-7. Tebhya Pitrubhya Statputra Devadanava Guhyaka Manushya Siddha Gandharva Savidyadara Charana Tebhya Pitrubhya Statputra Devadanava Guhyaka Manushya Siddha Gandharva Savidyadara Charana Tebhya Pitrubhya Statputra Devadanava Guhyaka Manushya Siddha Gandharva Savidyadara Charana. Devadanava Guhyaka Putrubhyastatputra Devadanava Guhyaka Manushya Siddha Gandharva Matajis. Word to word translation. Tebhyaha, from them, Bhrugumuni, etc. Pitrubhya, from the forefathers, Tatputra, their sons, Deva, the demigods, Danava, demons, Guhyaka, the Guhyakas, Manushya, human beings, Siddha Gandharva, Siddhas and Gandharvas, Savidyadara Charana, along with Vidyadharas and Charanas. I'll read the two more verses and then read the translation and purport. Kin deva kinnara naga rakshak kim purushadayah bhakyastesham prakritayo rajas sattvatamo bhuvah yabir bhutani vidyante bhutanam patayastata yata prakriti sarvesham chitra vachasravantihi. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace S.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. From the forefathers headed by Bhrigumuni and other sons of Brahma appeared many children and descendants who assumed different forms as demigods, demons, human beings, Guhyakas, Siddhas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Charanas, Kindevas, Kinnaras, Nagas, Kim Purusha and so on. All of the many universal species along with the respective leaders appeared with different natures and desires generated from the three modes of material nature. Therefore, because of the different characteristics of the living entities within the universe, there are a great many Vedic rituals, mantras and rewards. Purport. If one is curious why Vedic literatures recommend so many different methods of worship and advancement, the answer is given here. Bhrigu, Marichi, Atri, Angira, Pulastya, Pulaha and Kratu are the seven great Brahmana sages and forefathers of this universe. The Kimdevas are a race of human beings who are like the demigods, completely free from fatigue, sweat and body odor. Seeing them, one may thus ask, Kim Deva, are they demigods? Actually, they are human beings living on another planet within the universe. The Kinnaras are so called because they are Kinchin Nara, are a little like human beings. The Kinnaras have either a human head or a human body, but not both, combined with a non-human form. The Kim Purushas are so called because they resemble human beings and thus prompt the question, Kim Purusha, are these human beings? Actually, they are a race of monkeys who are almost like human beings. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that this verse describes the varieties of forgetfulness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The different Vedic mantras and rituals are especially meant for the different species of intelligent beings throughout the universe. But the proliferation of Vedic formulas indicates only the variety of material illusion and not a variety of ultimate purpose. The ultimate purpose of the many Vedic injunctions is one, to know and love the Supreme Personality of God. The Lord Himself is emphatically explaining this to Sri Uddhava. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Namavo Vishnupadaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pashyati Dashatarine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram 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 Hare Hare. So we are reading this beautiful verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Lord Krishna in this particular verse, in fact this chapter began with Uddhava's question to Krishna, about different processes mentioned in the Vedic literatures. He is asking that why there are so many different processes mentioned in the Vedic literatures. Are all these processes on the same level? Do they all lead to the same goal? Or is there some superior and is there any gradations of these processes? So in that sense, Uddhava is asking a very straightforward question to Krishna. Like we can find different sections of the Bhagavad Gita similar to the Uddhava Gita. Like for example, in the 12th chapter, Arjuna asks a very straightforward, unambiguous question to Krishna about the personalist and the impersonalist. Who is superior, is a personalist or an impersonalist? And then Krishna also gives a very straightforward answer. Maya Veshya Mano Yemam Nitya Yukta Upasate Shraddaya Parayopeta Steme Yukta Tama Mata. One who is actually worshipping my personal form is considered to be definitely superior not only to the impersonalist but is superior to the, in fact, people who follow the other paths. So similarly, Uddhava is asking a very straightforward question, and Krishna begins by talking about the origin of the Vedas. He says that I myself the origin of the Vedas, and then he mentioned that this Vedic knowledge is actually coming through the disciplic succession. The beginning of the creation, I spoke the Vedic knowledge to Brahma, and then through Brahma and his different sons, the Vedic knowledge is coming through the parampara system, similar to what Krishna explained in the Bhagavad Gita 4th chapter. Now, in this particular verse which we are reading today, Krishna is saying that from the forefathers headed by Bhrigumuni and other sons of Brahma appeared various descendants. They are called as Kim Devas, Kinnaras, Kim Purushas, Vidyadharas, Charana. All these are different living entities who live in different parts of the universe. There's a brief description of those of these different personalities are explained in the purport. Like Kim Devas, they resemble like a human being, but they don't actually sweat like a human being. They are like demigods. They completely like the demigod. They are a race of a human beings, but at the same time they resemble like the demigods because they don't have fatigue, they don't have tiredness, etc., sweat. And there are Kinnaras. So Kinnaras are that they resemble little bit like the human beings. And then Kim Purushas are those living entities who either have a human head and an animal body, or a human body with an animal head. And then there are Vidyadharas, Charanas, etc. So, because of the different characteristics of the living entities within the universe, who all have a different combinations of the three modes of nature, there are a great many varieties of Vedic rituals, mantras and rewards. So, one of the things which I want to focus today is that how the Vedic literatures, they actually deal with the they deal with the varieties of living entities and their propensities and their desires, because that's what we find in this particular verse. There are so many different types of living entities are there, and all these living entities have different desires, and they are born of the different combination of the different modes, and for them the different types of Vedic rituals and methods are there. That's what Krishna explains in this verse. So one of the things we find in the Vedic literatures or in the path of Sanatan Dharma, how the Vedic literatures, they cater to the varieties of propensities of the living entities, varieties of desires of the living entities. For example, in different branches, like for example, that If we take the aspect of Varnashram Dharma, Vedic literatures, they actually give different occupations, different rules and regulations for people in different varnas and ashramas. So we always have this analogy that Vedas are like a mother. If you want to know the father, you have to consult the mother. But if we extend this analogy further, just like a mother who has many children, mother will know the psychology and the prakriti, the nature of each and every child, and the capacity of each and every child. Traditionally, if you interact with your grandmothers or different, previously people had many children, and the mothers and the grandmother, they would know actually, for this particular child, this child is actually allergic to something, he cannot take this particular food. And this child has capacity to eat that much. A mother understands the nature and capacity of the different children, and then accordingly actually prepares food for the different children. So similarly, the Vedas are like a mother, and all the living entities are like the Krishna is the father. So and Vedas are like the mother, and the Vedas actually understanding the different natures of the living entities. Vedas actually give different ways of living, different rules and regulations for the different living entities. Like for the Brahmana, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. And like for example, when Narada Muni explains the Varnashram principle to Yudhishthira Maharaj, he describes the different occupations of the different Varnas. And then he says that there are people who are below the Shudras also, they are called as Ante Vashayis. These Ante Vashayis, they are allowed to drink wine. In the community of Ante Vashayis, there may be marriage in which they don't see the caste, etc. And then he says that, but then if these principles are followed by people in the higher varnas, then it is considered adharma for them. So that means what is something all right, what is normal for certain people, and it is considered to be adharmic for other people. So the Vedas actually deal with that sense, they understand the psychology and the varieties of the living entities and prescribed different ways of living. And not only in regards to living, like in this particular verse which we are seeing, Krishna is saying that the different living entities, because they are born of different modes of nature, because there are so many varieties of living entities, so all of them have different varieties of material desires. So for their sake, the Vedas give different methods of rituals, and the Vedas give different programs for worshipping different demigods. Like Bhagavatam says that Rajas Tamas Prakritaya Samashila Bhajanti Vai. The first canto, second chapter, Sutta Goswami says that people in the modes of passion and ignorance, they worship different forms of the demigods which they can actually relate to, which is attractive to them. Samashila Bhajanti Vai means the Prabhupada says that just like a birds of a feather flock together, so similarly, people in different modes of material nature, they get attracted to the different forms of the demigods. In general, demigod worship is in mode of passion and ignorance, but within that, there is so much of variety. So some people are attracted to the little ghastly forms of the demigoddesses like Durga and Kali. Some people are attracted to different other forms of the demigods. So all these methods to worship different demigods, to perform different rituals are mentioned in the Vedas, because there are living entities with different types of material desires. So in that way, the whole Karmakanda path is actually, the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, they talk about worship of the different demigods. So from that we can understand, like we can try to appreciate the personal nature of the Vedas. That how the Vedas instead of trying to impose one particular path, they try to see the different propensities of the living entities and then they recommend worship of the different demigods. And then when we come to the in the Karmakanda path, the living entities, they actually desire certain material, they have a certain material goals. Maybe they may want to go to some heavenly planets or they want to fulfill different material desires. And for them, worship of the different demigods are mentioned. But when a person becomes exhausted of all the material desires, and when a living entity seeks a non-material goal, and even in that, Vedas offer varieties of programs, varieties of paths. It's like Vedas offer the path of Jnana Marga, or Ashtanga Marga, Ashtanga Yoga Marga, or the Bhakti Marga. So in the Jnana Marga, a person focuses on a non-material goal, but he focuses on the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. And in Ashtanga Yoga Marga, a living entity focuses on the Paramatma aspect. And the Bhakti Marga, a person focuses on the Bhagavan aspect. So we see that that at every level, the Vedas actually see the Vedic literatures, see the diversities of the living entities, the different propensities, different desires and the different goals, and then they actually prescribe different paths. And then if we see, like for example, the second canto of the Bhagavatam, when Shukadeva Goswami is answering to Parikshit Maharaj, first he talks about that the yogi who cannot actually appreciate the 200 form of the Supreme Lord or the 400 form of the deities, the Lakshmi Narayan deity or Radhakrishna deities, who cannot appreciate the personal form of the Lord, initially the yogi is recommended to meditate on the universal form of the Lord, which is called as the path of Krama Mukti. So first a person meditates on the universal form, and then a person, when he becomes further purified, then he comes to the stage of actually meditating on the Paramatma aspect, and then further he comes to the stage of actually worshipping the Bhagavan aspect. So in that sense, we find that Vedic literatures at every step, understanding the different level of the living entities, they offer actually different paths. So if somebody is, we find this approach even in Krishna, when he is teaching the path of Bhakti Marga. Like we find different varieties of paths within the Karmakanda, and when a person seeks a non-material goal, even there also there are varieties of path, Jnana Marga, Ashtanga Yoga Marga, Bhakti Marga. And even when Krishna is teaching the path of Bhakti Marga, so there also Krishna has this particular mood. He says that, the best thing is to actually fix your mind on me. But if somebody cannot fix my mind on me, then one should fix one's intelligence on me. But if somebody cannot fix one's intelligence on me, one should try to practice the path of sadhana bhakti. One should try to practice fixing the mind and intelligence on me. And if somebody cannot do that, then one should at least work for me with one's working senses, with the body, one should work for me. And if a person cannot do that, at least one should practice Nishkama Karma Yoga. Or one should work for some good cause, some selfless cause. So like that, Krishna, even when he is teaching Bhakti Marga, he is actually, we can see that accommodating nature of Krishna. So one is to teach the path of Bhakti Marga, but another is having the mood of accommodation while teaching Bhakti Marga. Suppose if a teacher of Bhakti Marga, if he says that, you have to come to this level, and if you cannot come to this level, then there is no room for you, then you will have to get out. Suppose somebody says that, you have to chant 16 rounds, you have to follow these things. But if somebody is unable to do that, then okay, how he can actually advance? We should give some, how he can actually come to the next level. But if he don't have the accommodating mood, even though one may be teaching the Bhakti Marga, but he is having the mood of a like a Jnana Marga. He's having the mood of a Jnani. So we find this mood of accommodation in Krishna, who is teaching the Bhakti Marga, and also in the Vedic literatures, which actually prescribe different paths according to the, because there are people who cannot, who don't have the adhikar, who don't have the qualification to take the Bhakti Marga. But there are many people who cannot appreciate the Nirguna reality. So even to actually bring them, if we cannot appreciate the Nirguna reality, okay, at least worship certain forms of the demigods. By that, you actually make limited spiritual advancement instead of becoming actually atheistic or instead of becoming materialistic. And we find that in the path of Bhakti Marga also, how Krishna, he does not impose that you have to worship only this particular form. In fact, Krishna says, depending on the mood of a devotee, whichever form he is attached to, I will reciprocate in that form. Brahmaji prays in the third canto, that Tvam Bhakti Yoga Paribhavita Hrit Saroja Ase Shrutekshita Pato Nanunata Pumsam Yadyad Diyata Urugaya Vibhava Yanti Tattad Vapu Pranayase Sadanugrahaya. So Brahmaji is saying in this prayer that Krishna mentions that depending on the particular sadhana which a devotee in the Bhata Bhakti Marga performs, and depending on whichever form he is attached to, the Lord appears in that particular form. So in that sense, we can see that how Krishna actually respects the individuality of the person. Whereas, we will see that many of the non-Vedic religions, they don't actually respect the individuality. Oh, if you cannot follow this particular path, then the only option is that you have to go to hell for the rest of eternity. So that respect for the individuality is not there. And we find another verse in the Bhagavatam, again Brahmaji's prayers, but in the 10th canto, where Brahma is mentioning about the unlimited qualities of Krishna. Gunatmanas tepi gunan vimatum hitava tirnasya ka ishvarasya kalena yairva vimitasu kalpair bhupamshavakke mihikadyubasa. So he says that somebody may manage to count the number of sand particles in a river, or somebody may manage to count the number of snow particles, or somebody may manage to count the number of light particles. But even if a person manages to count all these things, but one will not be able to count the number of qualities of Krishna. In fact, these three examples which are given, each of these examples are successively subtler and subtler. Snow particles is more subtler than the sand particles, and light particles even subtler. And there are personalities like Lord Ananta, they have actually managed to count the number of sand particles, snow particles and the light particles, but he has not been able to count the number of qualities of the Lord. And then Sanatana Goswami says there, in that purport, that why does actually the Supreme Lord has unlimited qualities? So he says that there are unlimited number of living entities having different varieties of natures, different varieties of proclivities. And in order to attract all the unlimited number of living entities in a personal way, therefore the Lord exhibits unlimited qualities. Because each and every living entity may particularly get attracted to one particular quality of the Lord. So the Lord manifests unlimited qualities in order to attract the unlimited living entities. So in that sense, we find that that how the Vedic literatures and the Supreme Lord, they want to, they respect the different natures of the living entities, they prescribe different methods of living in the Varnashram principles, and in the Karmakanda section, in order to fulfill the different types of material desires, the Vedic literatures recommend different methods of worship to the different demigods. And even when a living entity seeks a non-material goal, depending on a person's inclination, depending on a person's adhikar and eligibility, the Vedas actually prescribe different methods. And even in the path of Bhakti Marga, understanding the level of different person, that Krishna is recommending different things, how a person, different processes, how a person can elevate himself. And even when it comes to the personal form of the Lord, depending on the mood of the devotee, the Lord actually reciprocates in a particular form and he exhibits different qualities. So we can see that Vedic literatures, how they respect the diversity of the living entities and reciprocate. On the other hand, when we see the materialistic thought process or a non-Vedic thought process, they actually, one of the main characteristics of a non-Vedic thought process or the followers of the non-Vedic path, they try to destroy the diversities. Because diversity is one of the fundamental nature of the Lord's creation. In one class, His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj mentioned that spiritual world is a place where there are varieties of ways of serving Krishna. There are different devotees who serve Krishna in different ways. And material world is a place where there are living entities who are having a varieties of ways of rebelling against Krishna. So, but the variety is a fundamental nature of the Lord's creation, either in the material world or in the spiritual world. And when we talk about a demoniac psychology, the demoniac psychology, fundamentally it tries to destroy the natural order of the Lord's creation. Like for example, Hiranyakashipu sent those who are doing pious activities, he started sending them to hell. And those who are doing sinful activities, he wanted to send them to heaven. Whatever is the natural order of the Lord's system, he wanted to actually destroy, he wanted to change that. So similarly, the diversity is a natural order of the Lord's creation, and when somebody tries to destroy the diversity, that is nothing but a demonic psychology. And we find that this psychology comes in, like few years back when I went to Gokul Dham, one devotee was sharing that in India, in every different state, there are particular types of cows which belong to that particular region. There are Gir cows in Gujarat, and there are, I'm not expert in that subject, but different, like for example, in Tamil Nadu, there are a type of cows called a Kangeyam, and Maharashtra there will be particular type of cows. So he was mentioning that there are different varieties of cows in India, but after the Europeans, when they came to India, like if we see the number of varieties of cows reduced to a very small number, because after that organized slaughterhouses started, that the original breeds of the cows, they have been actually they are practically getting destroyed. And so in that sense, this non-Vedic thought process, they try to destroy the diversity, not only with respect to the animals, but with respect to the different, even with respect to the eatables also. So previously, there were like some hundreds of varieties of rice were there in India. Like different parts of India, they would grow different types of rice. But after the mechanized system of agriculture and these things started, that number of varieties of rices have reduced. Like wherever, if you read in the like scriptures, wherever there is a description of some natural place, like for example in the Bhagavatam, there's a description of the Vaikuntha planets, or the description of the Bindu Sarovar, where Kardama Muni was performing austerities. There's a description of Kailash, where Brahmaji goes to meet Lord Shiva. Now all these descriptions, one thing you will find common is that there are varieties of birds, varieties of trees. Some verses after verses describe about different types of trees, different types of flowers. So in that sense, that the traditional agriculture, there will be different varieties of crops would be grown. But I saw one video where about the modern agriculture, for acres and acres there is only one particular crop. So that means, like, all these are driven by the demonic thought process, which tries to destroy the diversity, which is a natural, which is natural in a Lord's creation. And this psychology of destroying the diversity is not prevalent only within the, say, crops or the animals or this one, but it comes within the human beings also. So even this idea of that equal rights for man and women, so that is also actually originating from the psychology of not recognizing the diversity, variety between two genders. If we just think that if man and woman both are equal, then why the Lord must have created two genders? He would have just created only one gender. So he is so foolish like that. So therefore, this demonic thought process is nothing but it tries to actually destroy the diversity. And even when the non-Vedic followers or the non-Vedic religions, whenever they come to different, whenever they go to different places, one thing we find is that they try to destroy the local tradition, local culture, the local language. Whereas exactly in contrast, in the Vedic literatures, they recognize the different varieties of desires, different varieties of the levels of the different living entities, and they actually recommend different paths. And this is one thing which I want to discuss about the difference between the Vedic path and the non-Vedic religion. How the Vedas actually recognize the diversity and then prescribe different paths. Whereas the non-Vedic followers, the non-Vedic religions, their thought process is to destroy the diversity. The second thing which I want to discuss was that about the conclusion of the Vedas. About the conclusion of the Vedas, I will take two verses. There is one verse which Rupa Goswami quotes in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. When he describes about the different aspects of Bhakti Rasa, he says the Bhakti Rasa is a combination of Vibhava, Anubhava, Satvika Bhava, Vyabhichari Bhava and Sthayi Bhava. Of course, I will not go into the details of this, but these are the five ingredients of Bhakti Rasa. So one of the ingredients is called as Vyabhichari Bhava, which is called as aggressive ecstasy. And in that he mentions there are 33 types of Vyabhichari Bhava, and one is called as a Mati or thoughtfulness. And there he quotes a verse from Padma Puran. This verse says that when a person goes through all the Vedic literatures, all the Puranas, Itihasas, Agamas, Upanishads, all the Vedas, after reading all the Vedic literatures, and then after analyzing all the Vedic literatures, and then one will come to the conclusion that Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Lord. So this is a verse from Padma Puran he quotes. Like, sometimes one of the difficulty which the Indologists had when they tried to read the Vedic literatures was that they found it, they got bewildered by reading the Vedic literatures, because some places some particular worship of the Devata is recommended, some places Indra, some places Chandra, some places Lord Shiva, some places Lord Brahma. So they felt that maybe the Vedic literatures, they are written by different people. They couldn't understand how the Vedas present one unified, coherent message. They were not able to appreciate, they were not able to understand, because one thing is that they didn't want to study under a guru. So just like I think few years, like in the temple, there are different electrical circuits are there. But then, over the period of time, like the devotees were in the maintenance, they were not able to get a full picture of the overall picture of the different electrical circuits in the temple. Because like some particular main switch of some particular hall is there in some place. Main switch of another hall was there in different place. And so then they made a decision to actually make a like overall picture of the electrical circuits in the temple. Because then you will get an idea when the overall picture is there, you know that okay, this circuit is going here, this is the main switch, etc. So similarly, that many people read different sections of the Vedic literatures and then they come up with different conclusions. But this verse from Padma Puran, which Rupa Goswami quotes, is that this verse says that when you read the Vedic, all the Vedic literatures, and then when you try to see the when we try to see what is the overall message of the Vedas, one will come to the conclusion that Lord Vishnu is the supreme Lord. And he quotes it in the Rupa Goswami, in the Bhakti Rasama Sindhu. And then we also see another verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavan Brahma Katsyena Trir Anvikshya Manishaya Tad Adhyavasyat Kutastho Ratir Atman Yato Bhavit. So in this verse it's explained that Lord Brahma read the Vedas three times with full concentration and with a complete scrutiny and with full attention. And after reading the three times the Vedas, then he came to the conclusion that Ratir Atman Yato Bhavet. The ultimate conclusion of the Vedas to develop attraction toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead Bhagavan. So in that sense, this overall message of the Vedas is presented. What is the ultimate conclusion of the Vedas? We get from these two verses. Otherwise, that people get bewildered by reading different sections of the Vedas and they come up with different conclusions. And then, the next point which I want to discuss was that when we present the highest conclusion of the Vedas, highest conclusion of the Vedas is to the supreme sadhya is the personality of Godhead. In particular, the Srimad Bhagavatam says the supreme sadhya is the personality of God in the form of Krishna. And the supreme sadhana is the path of bhakti marga for attaining that Bhagavan. But there is a verse in the Uddhav Gita, in the conclusion of the Uddhav Gita, where Sukadeva Goswami is mentioning that what is the mood in which Krishna presents this ultimate conclusion of the Vedas. So Sukadeva Goswami says that Lord Krishna presented the essence of the Vedic wisdom to Uddhava just like a honeybee presents the extracts the essence of a flower. Extracts the nectar which is the essence of the flower. There he says that when a honeybee extracts the essence, the nectar which is the essence of the flower, it does not actually destroy the other inferior parts of the flower. So similarly, Krishna, while presenting the essence of the Vedic wisdom to Uddhava, he did not actually disturb or he did not destroy the other inferior processes mentioned in the Vedas, which are meant for people who cannot appreciate the nirguna reality and how they can also come forward by following this process. So, while presenting the highest reality, he did not disturb the other elaborate gradual processes mentioned in the Vedas. So this is an important verse when we see from the point of view of the teacher of bhakti, the teacher of bhakti marga, the Bhagavad Dharma, that while teaching the highest path, it is not that we become unnecessarily critical of the other processes mentioned in the Vedas. And we find there are different verses which carry the same mood. Which are there in the Bhagavatam. Like for example, the 10th canto, 23rd chapter, and the wives of the Brahmanas come to meet Krishna. So Krishna reciprocates with them and finally he tells the wives of the Brahmanas, he says that you have actually come and given these foodstuffs. Now you must go back and actually assist your husbands. And Krishna, actually the voice of the Brahmanas, when they came to meet Krishna, they didn't have a thought to again go back. Because they actually rebelled against all the relatives, and then they came to meet Krishna with the foodstuffs. And they never thought, that they just wanted to be with Krishna, they just wanted to be in the forest, they didn't want to go back. But Krishna told them that you must go back and assist your husbands, and who are performing different Vedic rituals in worshipping the different devatas. And please understand that these rituals, the sacrifices which your husbands are performing, they are mentioned in the Vedic literature, which are my words only. Therefore, you must go and assist them. And you can see me, you can see my presence even in those Vedic rituals. So that is how Krishna concludes his instruction to the wives of the Brahmanas. So we see, in the case of those Brahmanas, so because they were absorbed in the rituals, they forgot the ultimate goal of those Vedic rituals. That is to worship the Supreme Lord. When they were told that, oh, Krishna and Balaram are hungry, they just drove away all, they didn't completely neglected those actually cowherd boys. But Krishna, who knows the ultimate goal of the Vedas, but he still appreciates, he tells the devotees, you please raise your vision and see that how your husbands performing those Vedic rituals, they are also actually, they are also trying to follow my words only, although they may not, in one sense, they may not recognize me as the highest goal, but still, in one sense, they are following my words only. In that sense, Krishna is trying to raise the consciousness of the wives of the Brahmanas, is trying to make them little more broad-minded and raise their vision. Now, another verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Prahlad Maharaj is giving his instruction to his classmates. So Prahlad Maharaj says that Vedic literatures recommend different paths of austerity, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, nyaya. It mentioned different paths of rituals, etc. I understand that all these paths are meant for people who have different eligibilities. I do not criticize these paths, but I personally prefer that surrendering to the Supreme Lord is the highest path. And I actually recommend this path to you, like that Prahlad Maharaj says in one verse to his classmates. So Prahlad Maharaj, while presenting the highest truth, at the same time, he is not having undue criticism towards the other paths. He actually recognizes them, those paths are also valid. And that is the same mood which Krishna exhibits in actually presenting the Uddhava Gita. And another verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the prayers offered by the Nagapatnis to Krishna. And there's a beautiful verse in which they say that, Nama Pramana Moolaya. We offer our obeisances to the Pramana Moola. So Pramana Moola, here it refers to Srimad Bhagavatam. So they say that we offer our respects to the ultimate root of all the Pramanas, that is, we offer our respects to the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Jiva Goswami, the Tattva Sandarbha, he explains that how Srimad Bhagavatam is the Chakravarti Pramana. It is the emperor among all the Pramanas. And then the Nagapatni say that we offer our obeisances to the Pramana Moola, and we offer our obeisances to the compiler of that Pramana Moola, that is, we offer obeisances to Veda Vyasa. And then they say that we offer our obeisances to the literatures which recommend Pravritti Marga and literatures which recommend Nivritti Marga. Pravrittaya, Nivrittaya. So the Vedic literatures, like in this current verse, Krishna is talking about different rituals mentioned in the Vedas. Most of these rituals, they come under the path of Pravritti Marga. So we offer our obeisances to all those Vedic literatures which talk about Pravritti Marga and Nivritti Marga. And then we offer our obeisances to you, who is the source of both. These literatures. So in that sense, the wives of the Nagapatnis, they pay their highest respects to the Pramana Moola, Srimad Bhagavatam, and to Krishna. At the same time, they show the respect towards the literatures which talk about the Pravritti Marga, which are also mentioned in the Vedas. which are meant for gradual elevation of the different living entities. And lastly, we find that like in the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given the he says that among the five teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam. He establishes the supremacy of Krishna and the path of Bhakti Marga. But we find in the Bhagavatam that, for example, like Parishit Maharaj asked a question at the end of first canto, what is the duty of a person about to die and what is the duty of a person in all circumstances? So Shukadeva Goswami answers that. Tasmat Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishwaru Hari Shrotavya Kirti Tavyascha Smartavyascha Chatabhayam, like that. He answers those things, that one should hear, chant and remember the Supreme Lord in all circumstances. But we find, but Parikshit Maharaj, but throughout the Bhagavatam, is asking various set of questions. Normally, generally, if we see, if somebody is asking different questions, that means we think that, oh, he is not knowing, he doesn't know the highest goal. And we may think that if somebody knows the highest goal, then he may not ask, he may not have any questions. But here, Parikshit Maharaj, he has answered the, Shukadeva Goswami has answered the highest question of Parikshit Maharaj, but still Parikshit Maharaj goes on asking so many questions. Throughout the Bhagavatam, that leads the discussion of the Bhagavatam to like various pastimes. And for example, even in the second canto, 8th chapter, Parikshit Maharaj asks, a long list of questions about the different planetary systems, different varnashram principles, and different rules of dharma, artha, and kama, and the different aspects of creation. And even this, we find this also in the quality of Vidur also. We find this quality even in Vidur also. Like Vidur says in the third canto, 7th chapter, he mentions that Sanchinna Samshayo Mahiyam Tava Siksha Sukta Asina Vibhu. All my doubts have been destroyed and my mind is now perfectly understanding the subject matter. I understand the position of the Supreme Lord and the living entity. But then after that, he asks a long list of questions. He asks a long list of questions about the different planetary systems. He asks questions about the, please describe about the rules of Shraddha. Please describe about the duties of the different varnas and the duties of them during during emergency. And then he asks all these different list of questions. And then finally he asks that I am asking all these list of questions with a desire to know the person, with a desire to know the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. The desire to know the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. And then he says that only when all these questions are answered, then my mind will be able to concentrate on the Supreme Lord with one-pointed attention, without any diversion. And then when my mind is able to concentrate on the Supreme Lord with one-pointed attention, then I'll be able to attain the Supreme Lord. So, from this we can understand that even when a person knows the ultimate conclusion of the Vedas, like this personality is like Parikshit Maharaj Vidur, but still they are inquisitive about different subject matters, but that inquisitiveness is not simply to get some information. That inquisitiveness is actually directed towards appreciating the personality of Godhead more and more. Well, that's what he concludes by saying that I'm asking all these questions with the desire to know more the passage of the Supreme Lord. So therefore, that even when the highest conclusion is presented, but still we find in these personalities that they want to appreciate the highest conclusion more and more. That means they want to they don't want to just remain, they don't want to simply remain lazy, they want to work hard and they want to know the different subject matters. And that is what Gauravind Maharaj explains, that even though Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given the highest thing, But although he has given the highest thing, we have to develop the qualification for it. He says that, like suppose, when there is a lion's milk is there, and there is a lion's milk, that in order to hold the milk, you need a pot. But in order to hold the milk of a lioness, you need a normal pot will not do, you need a golden pot in order to hold that milk of a lioness. So similarly, in one verse in Adi Leela, it is explained that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is like a lion, Chaitanya Simha. He actually roars like a lion. His shoulders are like a lion. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what he has given, he has given the highest thing, but in order to hold that, we have to develop that qualification. We have to develop that patrata. And for that, we need to work hard. And we find a similar mood in actually Vidur. Although having gotten the highest conclusion, but still he has so many questions. In order to actually fix his mind completely on the Supreme Lord, he is putting that endeavor. So, in that sense, to conclude, we discussed about the fundamental difference between the Vedic path and the non-Vedic thought process. How the Vedic thought process, Vedic paths actually recognize the diversity of the different living entities and recommends different paths according to the eligibility within the Karma Kanda, within the Jnana Marga, Ashtanga Marga, within the Path of Bhakti Marga. And even in the Path of Bhakti Marga, also we see how the Krishna recognizes values the individuality of the living entities and reciprocates accordingly. And whereas the thought process of a non-Vedic path is that they want to destroy the diversity among the animals, among the food grains, and in between the human beings, between man and women. And then next we discussed about the conclusion of the Vedas. We took a verse from the Padma Puran and from the Srimad Bhagavatam second canto. And then we discussed about, while presenting the highest conclusion of the Vedas, what is the mood adopted by Krishna in speaking to Uddhava? How he does not destroy the other inferior processes mentioned in the Vedas, at the same time presents the highest conclusion in the Uddhava Gita. And we found several references for that. And then finally we discussed that even when a devotee knows the highest conclusion, but still he is inquisitive about different subject matters, with a mood to actually appreciate that highest conclusion more and more. Like in the example of Vidur and Parishit Maharaj. So I'll stop here. Grantana Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.